In my estimation, you were worth saving. Worth a few drops of my life. I guess we'll see which one of us is right and which is a fool.
I'll give you 100 bucks on the fool, I said. Where are my cigarettes? I got a shower, passed on shaving the 2-week beard and dressed. I found a green and black paisley button-down shirt, a pair of well-worn jeans, and my boots, still with a few old flecks of dried blood, in the closet of the room. I figured Vigil had brought them from the mansion. I tied my hair off in a ponytail and went out to meet up with Grinner. I found Robert Shelton, a.k.a. Grinner, in the galley-style kitchen that was a nexus for this floor of the hard limit, which included Dragons and Anna's suites and an arm of guest rooms like mine. Grinner was sitting at a small table, a tea nook that Anna often haunted, sipping from a bottle of water and reading a dog-eared paperback copy of Gibson's Mona Lisa Overdrive. Grinner was tall, well over 6 feet, and stocky. His midnight black dye-job hair had grown out to a lazy military-cut length, no longer high or tight, but close. He was sporting matte black plugs in his ears these days, and I thought I caught a flash of new ink on his thick, muscular forearms. He was clean-shaven except for a black soul patch on his wide face. He wore baggy gray cargo shorts that fell to just below his knees. The pants had more pockets and pouches than Batman's utility belt, most likely a very similar content. He wore ripped-up black Chuck Taylors that had a 3-teardrop yin-yang symbol on the sides, as well as a black Motorhead T-shirt that he had owned since I first met him more than 20 years ago. Grinner had an earbud in one ear connected to his smartphone on the table. "What the fuck are you doing here, Mr. Robot?" I asked as I opened the fridge and fished out a cold can of energy drink.
"Waiting for your lazy ass to wake up so I can get back to work," Grinner said, putting down the book and slipping the earbud free. "How you doing, man?"
"I'm good," I said, ready to get back on this. "Oh, and what's this shit about being on retainer? Does that make you my faithful manservant?"
"That makes you a fucked lump," he rumbled. "Don't push it. You contracted me for intel, and I'm doing that job. That makes you a client until we settle up, so it would have been a conflict of interest to take another job."
I laughed and sat down at the small table. "Conflict of interest? When did you get a morals transplant?" I said. "Besides, I paid you up front."
"For what I already got for you. So now you're paying me more. That makes you still my client." "Oh, and I'm adding a little more to the tab since you questioned my business ethics."
"Thanks, man," I said. "If you'd cracked that dry for Anku, I've got a feeling I would have woken up back in a dumpster."
"Thank you from you, Ballard, is about as sincere as a kiss from a whore," he said. "And don't be so sure. Anku may be a smeghead, but his man, Vigil, he seems pretty solid. He treated me square."
"I don't trust him," I said. "That whole samurai honor thing."
Grinner laughed. "Shit, man. He's you back in the day when you still gave a shit. Still believed in something. No wonder I don't like him." "Didjiri sends her love," he said. "She was going to meet me out here when I got the word you were laid out, but she had a last-minute consult with some cops in Texas about some red-skinned, tentacled Aussie critter called a Taramayahu. Apparently they got one out there eating people. She's worried about you and about Magdalena, but she felt she had to go help them stop this thing."
I nodded. "Yeah, they're part of the dream time and can be a bitch to dislodge from the material world. Give her my love back. I saw Magdalena. Tell her she's okay."
Grinner said. "I wish she had never crossed your path, pal. You fucked her up bad."
"Yeah," I said. I didn't know what else to say. I slipped the USB drive out of my jeans pocket and handed it to Grinner. "We cool to talk business in here?"
Grinner examined his smartphone and made a few swipes at the screen. "We are now," he said. Jagan and Anna have some kick-ass security in this place. They like to keep their clients protected. I just did an extra sweep and we're good. He examined the thumb drive and then it disappeared into one of the pockets of his utility shorts. Somewhere in that data is the identity Karen Anku slipped into back in 2009. It's the next path stone on the road. I need it quick. The trail is ice cold. She may have already ditched this idea and moved on. If she did, I'll pick up the trail, he said. Give me a few hours. Vigil said the emerald tablet hermetic struck out trying to crack the encryption, I said. Grinner gave me a faux expression of gasping fear. Oh, no, he said. If those fucking wand-waving script kiddies can't hack it, then what chance could I, a mere mortal, have? Grinner was in the life, of the life, but he was no wizard. All his voodoo was pure talent. He was a savant, seeing code the same way Mozart or Bach had seen music. He once told me that magic was nothing more than another type of coding, universal source code. Give me an hour, Chief, he said. I spent that hour ordering some food from a Thai place Anna, Dragon, and I used to eat at all the time. I ordered way too much food, but ended up devouring all of it. Dwayne and Gretchen came by to visit since they had heard I was back on my feet. I owe you, Dwayne, I said. Dwayne shrugged.
I'd say pay it forward, brah, but I know better. I'd get out of town if you can, Ballard. MS-13 is pissed about what went down at their crib and you whacking Francisco and Demir. You got every fucking Mara in L.A. looking for you. Those guys were a valuable commodity in their business. If they get a whiff of you, they will rain down on you hard.
Thanks, I said. I'm hoping I can finish this bit of business up quick and be on my merry way.
May not be that easy, Dwayne said. She's missed you and she wants to keep you here as long as she can.
Who? I asked.
The city, he said. She thinks you two belong together. She wants to hook back up with you like in the old days, wants to finish what you two started, says you owe her something. Watch yourself, man, she's crushing hard.
I knew what this bitch of a town wanted from me, and I was half tempted to give it to her. We had made promises to each other, vows, and I had broken mine, big surprise there. Who knows, before this was over, maybe I'd make good on my word and give L.A. what I owed her. Dwayne said he'd give me a heads up if he heard of any badness headed my way on the gang or city guy's front. I tried to pet Gretchen goodbye. She growled, snorted, and padded away. It was 2 hours before Grinner found me downstairs at the bar. I was on my third whiskey, and a sort of fairy tale by Tori Amos was playing over the hum of the client hive. Anna kept me company for a time.
I recall when you first came here,
Anna said, her elbow on the bar, watching me drink. It should be an Olympic sport.
You got so frustrated you couldn't find that silly drink anywhere.
Cheer wine, I said, sipping my drink. And it's still hard as hell to find in some places. Besides, it's not silly. It is a powerful elixir of all things good and pure.
No wonder it's hard to find, she said.
We were quiet for a moment, letting the music and the conversations around us fill the gap. Most of the men and women in the room were watching Anna, wanting her, or wishing they were her. I knew she felt the attention. She was one of the most hyper-aware people I'd ever met. She could read the energies in the room without any supernatural abilities. She also presented as very comfortable in her own skin, and for the most part that was true. Anna had fought more demons than I, all in her head, and had conquered many of them and made strict bargains with the ones that she couldn't. Just being near her, she radiated wellness, life.
You used to drink a lot less, she said, up until things got bad near the end. You ever think about quitting it?
Yeah, I said, gesturing to one of the bartenders to hit me again. I do pretty good for a while, then I run into something that shakes me up, reminds me of what a fuck-up I am, and I fall down, no big.
Do you remember when we used to meditate together? The yoga? That could help.
Why do you care? I asked.
You know why I do personally,
she said, standing.
I love you, no matter how hard you make it to do that. I also hate to see potential go to waste. It offends me.
That should be my epitaph, I said. She sighed and looked at me with those bright soul stones she called eyes.
I have an appointment,
she said.
Some music industry mogul that needs his ass minced into hamburger meat. To be continued.
Anna walked away and the whole world watched her, me included. The music had shifted to Cold Desert by Kings of Leon by the time Grinner took Anna's seat and ordered a club soda. He'd had his blue AA chip for several years now.
I found her, he said.
I thought she said an hour, I said with a grin.
Fuck you, he said. The attack took 48 minutes to crack that ugly bitch. The rest of the time was gift-wrap for your sorry, ungrateful ass. I put training wheels on this, so even you can't screw this up. Cheers, asshole.
We clinked glasses and drank. Grinner nodded toward the elevator.
Come on.
Upstairs in an empty office, Anna had instructed Grinner to use. He sat down behind the most heavily modded laptop on the planet.
I stood behind him. Here she is, he said and clicked the mouse. An image appeared on the screen of a beautiful young woman, a few years older than the photo Dree had given me, with longer platinum blonde hair, blue eyes that seemed to burn out of the screen, and a wistful, sad expression that was eons away from the girl laughing beside her best friend at a concert.
She's using the name Karen Anir, Grinner said.
He clicked on a file icon, and an MP5 clip began to play. It was a clip from a porn movie called, in a flash of cinematic brilliance, Myth Bust, Hers. The star of this tale of four guys trying in a very unconventional way to pay for their pizza was Karen, or Karen, if you prefer, in a pair of thigh-high rainbow-striped socks and nothing else.
Her stage name is Crystal Myth, he added.
I sighed. That minuscule, gnawed-on section of my insides that hadn't turned to oily black water had hoped the trail wouldn't end up here. The majority of me that swam in that oily water knew better, knew it would.
Well, shit, I said.
Grinner closed the video clip.
Yeah, he said. It's a goddamn shame. Crystal Myth has been huge in the adult entertainment biz for almost 5 years out here. She's been in over 400 films, been nominated for a ton of industry awards, if you can believe it.
Sadly, I can, I said. A fairy princess doing porn. I'm sure that's a draw.
Well, at least you know she's still in L.A., and now you know where to start looking for her,
Grinner said.
Yep, I said. Unfortunately, I do.
14. Most of my connections in the porn industry had faded, gone legit, or died, but I was pleasantly surprised to discover that Meat abided. Meat was born Christian Norlander. He was 6'7", around 200 pounds, blonde with blue eyes like a Viking surfer, and endowed with one of the most infamous penises in the shadowy history of the industry. Meat had worked with everyone in the biz. He was just coming up when I had met him in the 90s. By the end of the decade, he was a certified porn legend and one of the most recognized male talents around. Everyone in porn had a Meat story or two to tell, and Meat knew everyone else's stories, too. Only a select few knew that Meat's endowment was truly divine in more ways than one. He was the offspring of Priapus, a C-list, country-fried, slumming Greek fertility god who had been summoned up in L.A. during the Summer of Love by some hippie-wannabe tantric magi. Priapus was the closest thing the Greeks had to a god of pornography, and there are still small, secret cults connected to the adult entertainment industry that practice rites to him in New York, L.A., Mexico City, Eastern Europe, and a few other places. His shrines are the peep show booths with sticky floors. We all know how great Greek gods were at keeping it in their pants, right? Well, old Priapus literally couldn't. There weren't pants stretchy enough. In true Dirk Diggler fashion, the god was cursed with impotence. But the advent of cocaine injections and later little blue pills from mortal medicine helped him enough with his problem to work in the adult entertainment field for decades under the cunning alias Dick Knight. Mankind's chemical magic also provided an opportunity for the god to impregnate Meat's mom, a corn-fed USC undergrad by way of Kansas who was paying for college by stripping and the occasional porn shoot. Old Priapus disappeared around the time AIDS started decimating the porn industry, perhaps no longer getting what he needed to stay corporeal. Some say Dickie Knight is still around and is a leather-skinned, dirty Hawaiian shirt-wearing old man who produces porn in Florida these days. The skin trade has as much mythology to it as Bullfinch. Meat grew up in L.A. in as good a middle-class lifestyle as his dear mom could provide. Given his looks, his endowment, and his pedigree, he eventually was pulled into the gravity of the very insular porn world, where things like legacy can give you the keys to the kingdom. Meat did his first movie at 16, which was almost as big a secret as his divine blood. These days, Meat's income came from being a roid warrior, a dealer in all manner of anabolic cocktails to the wealthy and vain gym rats of greater Los Angeles. He still dabbled in the adult entertainment industry as a sometimes producer and on rare occasions talent. Vigil was now my official rock-faced shadow. I drove the Trevita toward the gym where, according to Dwayne and Dragon, he was conducting most of his business these days.
If I get jumped by a gang of leprechauns dressed like droogs or something of that ilk, Vigil said, I'm shooting you in the face first thing.
Then by all means, let's avoid Hollywood and Vine, I said. I'm too pretty to die.
Clearly, he said.
We caught up to Meat on his sales route. This stop was at a chain gym on Hollywood Boulevard that I recalled having a really sketchy reputation. Meat was doing dumbbell curls with a gentleman who wore numerous gold chains in spite of having no discernible neck. The walking man wedge possessed a torso that was the size of a frozen side of beef and a small pinched red face under the awning of a salt and pepper crew cut.
Okay, Dodge, give me three more. Come on, Bromato!
Meat bellowed inches from the face of the human tunnel support. The guy's face was twisted up in struggling anger. It reminded me of a clenched fist. Dutch, or Bromato, if you prefer, roared as he struggled through the last three reps of the set and dropped the dumbbells with a loud crash, making sure everyone else in the gym was made fully aware of his accomplishment. I thought of golf clapping, but when I saw the slow headshake of disgust coming from Vigil at the atrocious gym etiquette, I let it go. Meat, I said over the rumble of testosterone thunder. Hey, man! Meat's eyes widened with recognition, and he lumbered over to me, scooping me up off the floor and giving me a big bear hug. The parts of me that were still a little out, she protested, but I told them to shut the hell up.
Ballard!
Meat shouted in my ear.
Holy shit, man! How are you?
I patted his back and hugged him back as best I could. For a moment, I felt like Bugs Bunny in that old cartoon with the abominable snowman. Meat sat me down, and I nodded to Vigil. Meat, this is Burris. He's cool. Sorry to barge in on y'all during business hours, but I could use your help. Meat and Vigil fist bumped, and Meat gave a thumbs up to Dutch. Dutch nodded.
See you next week, bro,
Dutch rumbled. Meat scooped up his gym bag and slid his dark blue Vans hoodie on over his tank top. I saw the flash of a small pistol butt in Meat's hoodie pocket, and I knew Vigil had too, adding it to the violent equations he had running constantly in his skull. We followed Meat through the maze of free weight stations and machines weaving between beautiful people in $500 workout clothes with perfect hair and makeup, and old school gym rats in tattered boxing trunks and cut-off t-shirts soaked in sweat. The music thudding through the gym sound system, Pray to God by Calvin Harris and Haim, was at a volume so loud you couldn't hear yourself sweat. Meat stopped several times to hug someone or to take a quick order whispered in his ear. The blonde giant would nod, smile, and keep moving. Once we hit the doors and made our way to the parking lot behind the gym, Meat glanced back at me.
You don't look like a total loss, Ballard,
Meat said, inspecting me.
Looking pretty good. You still work out?
Vigil gave me an odd look and then replied.
He skipped up on his 40-ounce curls.
Meat laughed. Not in a while, I said, giving Vigil a mock, silent laugh. Life tends to give me plenty of cardio. We reached Meat's car, a fire-engine red 2016 Mustang with white stripes. His nickname was proudly proclaimed on the tags. He put the gym bag in the trunk and then turned and leaned on the back of his ride.
What you need, Ballard? I owe you big, man.
We're looking for someone in the biz, I said. She works under the name Crystal Myth. You know her? Meat nodded as soon as I said the name.
Yeah, Crystal, yeah. I've heard of her. That's the only name I think anyone knows her by, though.
We know who she really is, Vigil said. We're trying to find her.
I know folks have worked with her, Meat said. She was working everywhere for everyone up until a few years ago, and then she, you know, kind of faded, the way a lot of folks do in a business. But she dropped off the ride at, like, the top of her game. She was making serious bank, man.
Who for her? I asked.
Far as I know, she never had an agent, Meat said. She had a boyfriend, some producer that was looking out for her. I'm trying to remember the guy's name.
It's important, Vigil said, interrupting. We can make it worth your while.
Meat looked at Vigil with the demeanor of a deer in headlights, mashed up with the suspicious scan reserved for street predators and undercover cops. He glanced over to me for confirmation again that this guy was cool. I nodded.
It's okay, Meat, I said.
Do me a solid and ask around a bit, see if you can shake loose some names for me. There is a finder's fee involved. I'd like you to get it, man.
Yeah, sure, Ballard, Meat said. I could tell you this. Crystal wasn't just working the teeny bopper circuit. Before she dropped, she was doing this sick shit. Gonzo, shaky cam, semi-legal stuff, simulated snuff and rape, extreme fetish, even grotto. She swam out to the deep end, bro.
Wait, Vigil said. Grotto. Porn with actual supernatural beings in it. That's a real thing. I thought that was all bullshit.
Again, Meat gave him an incredulous look and shook his head.
Yeah, right, Meat said. First time in the big city?
He looked back to me.
I know she worked one of the weathermen's parties a couple of years back. They might be able to help you.
Bad chance, but I'll look them up anyway. Is the Iron Cauldron still in business? I asked. Meat nodded and grinned.
Yeah. It's in Westmont right now, a couple of blocks west of Century in Vermont. You fucking owls are still trying to shut it down. You can't catch what you can't find.
Owls? Vigil asked.
The Nightwise, I said. I was getting a little irritated with him now. Dirty Fifi still run the cauldron? Meat shook his head.
Nah, they did the saw a man in half trick with Fifi back a few years ago, but they didn't bother to put him back together. It's Rollin' Blue's place now.
Shit, I said. Meat nodded.
Yeah, he said. Your favorite soul-challenged L.A. mobster. I hear you and Dragon gave him hell back when he was coming up working muscle for the Gollum Father.
Son of a bitch is crazy, and that's coming from me, I said. He enjoyed his work for Saul a little too much, but I'm pretty sure he'd rather rip me off for information than kill me.
Hope is a beautiful thing, Ballard,
Meat said, slapping me on the shoulder.
Dare to dream, but watch your ass and the officers here too, man.
Vigil bristled at the remark, but said nothing.
I'll put out some feelers and see what I can dig up on Crystal for you.
I gave him my number, and like any professional street criminal, he didn't need to put it in his phone or keep it on paper. Meat snapped his fingers as he was opening the door to his Mustang.
Oh, shit!
He said as he slid into the car seat.
I just remembered, Alextra used to be Crystal's roommate.
Alextra? I asked.
Alextra Dare, Meat said. Talent. She's on her way up these days. She's not in the life. but Lexi and Crystal were besties back before Crystal took off. She's one of George Wilde's girls.
Meat named a few clubs where we could probably find Alextra and her manager partying. I slid him several $100 as he clasped my hand.
Talk soon, man. Good to see you, Ballard!
We walked back to the Trevita. I glared at Vigil, and he looked back at me.
What?
He asked. That, I said, jerking my thumb in the direction of the gym, is why I need to do this alone. You were freaking him out back there. He almost bailed on us a couple of times because of you.
Look,
Vigil said. First of all, the last time you went out on your own, I had to jump in to save your drugged-up, drunken, arrogant ass because you don't think. You react, and second, I do not read like a cop, okay? He stood on one side of the sports car and I on the other. We each leaned on the roof regarding the other.
It's not my fault that your sketch-ass contact got hinky.
Of course he fucking did, I said. He is sketch. You read like someone who doesn't hang out with sketch-ass people. I pulled out a cigarette and lit it. You are a damn knight of the houses of the Shining Lands. You don't normally traffic with pornographers, lowlives, and drug dealers, except for your boss, of course. You come off like a tourist, a cop, or the hand of wrath for some angry mafia god, and it shows.
Good, he said. I worked damn hard for a very long time to wash the stink of that life off of me.
He gestured toward my cigarette. I handed it to him across the roof, and he took a long drag on it. He savored the smoke in his lungs like a fine wine, exhaled it, and passed it back to me.
I tossed out the code of the street. All that bullshit from the bangers, the junkies, the players, the whores. I built something for me, something that didn't make me want to eat a gun or drink myself into a coma every night. I'm never going to apologize for being who I am.
I nodded and took a long pull on the smoke. Look, right now, we're heading into the deepest parts of the pits you dragged yourself out of. I said, I am a hustler, a player, and probably the biggest whore you'll ever meet. This is my backyard. We're walking through, not yours, not anymore. Anku knew that. He knew he'd need a scumbag to find his little girl. You send someone like me down into the sewer because it's my home. Let me do my job. It's a pretty awful job, but I'm the best at it. Let me do it. I offered Vigil the cigarette again. He considered it for a long moment and then shook his head curtly.
You know exactly what Anku and his needle-eared country club buddies see when they look at me.
Vigil's voice was cold slate.
Product, a commodity, a resource. A half-breed trap house thug his people recruited straight out of prison. You know what being a short ear means in their society, their world. It's the same shit I dealt with before I even knew what the fuck the Fae were. Being invisible in broad daylight or the center of fucking attention like you're going to jump someone or steal something every second. Being disposable, anonymous, to being feared and mistrusted. Getting told silently every goddamn day that it's not your world, not your home. You feel that acid eat away at your insides day after day, year after year, until you're empty, hollow, but still walking around. Hell, the color of my skin barely lowered me another rung in their estimation once they found out I was half fae. I owe Anku a debt. Do you understand that?
I nodded.
I didn't give a damn about myself or anyone else, and it locked me up so tight I couldn't feel a scrap of daylight, couldn't feel the sun warm on my skin. I rebuilt myself one promise at a time, one unbreakable line at a time. That's the power of discipline, of a code. It's your armor. No one can take it from you but you. I made an oath to keep you alive, to find Karen, and make sure she's safe. I made that oath not just to a man I owe a debt of honor to. I made it to myself. If you don't got a code, you have nothing.
Codes won't save you, I said. Honor won't save you. I'm the ghost of Christmas yet to come. You cling too tight to that shit when it fails you, and it will fail you. You go under fast and you go under deep.
So what does save you from yourself?
He asked. Let me get back to you on that, I said. Vigil sighed and shook his head.
Look, my job is to be the shield, he said, even if that means protecting you from you. I kill people. I lay the mighty low. It's the only thing I've ever been good at, killing, since I was 13. I gave my word. That's all life has left me. So you let me do my job and keep you alive.
It was quiet for a time, the traffic of the boulevard muffled by the buildings. In the ruins of a life full of lies and violence, failures and terrible mistakes, we'd each navigated the rubble by the guttering light of our better selves.
Vigil and I locked eyes. I nodded. Vigil nodded back.
Okay,
I said.
Okay,
he said.
Where to next?
Tucked away at 7734 Santa Monica Boulevard is a secret shrine, a monument to lives and souls hacked and hewn upon gilded beds. It is a haunted place of fallen street saints chewed up and spit out by Moloch, by Hollywood's hunted lies, devoured by you and by me. It is a temple that holds testament to the loss of the dearest of commodities, and it is home to a hidden goddess. Vigil and I parked on the street and walked back. It was close to midnight. The theater was partially hidden behind a large Morton Bay fig tree. The marquee declared Studs Theater. When I had lived in L.A., it had been called the Pussycat. This old porn movie palace was the site of the skin trades version of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The handprints, footprints, and signatures of the stars and starlets of porn's golden age were arrayed along the sidewalk in front of Studs. I walked up to the ticket window. 2 tickets for the main screen, I said.
What are you doing?
Vigil asked. Taking you to the movies, I said. You buy the popcorn. There was a stale smell in the dark theater. The feature currently playing was a classic piece of cinema called Rude Boys 3. Vigil and I stood by the lobby doors, and I began to count rows and seats silently.
What are we doing here?
Vigil whispered. There were about a dozen shadows occupying seats in the theater. I carefully counted down 4 rows from the back and then counted over 8 seats over from the far right wall.
Ritual, I said.
I learned about it from a pornomancer who owed me 5 ounces of cocaine, blessed by the antimatter Buddha. Fucker turned out to be full of shit, but he taught me this in trade.
Why would you even need blessed?
Vigil dismissed the troubling thought with a wave of his hand.
What does this ritual do?
I'm consulting a local expert on our missing princess. I spotted the seat I needed and moved down the aisle toward it. The seat was occupied by a man who looked like a guilty suburban husband. I sat down in the row behind him, and Vigil sat a few seats down from me.
Hi,
I whispered to the man, who practically jumped straight in the air.
I really need your seat. It's kind of got sentimental value for me. It's where Dad proposed to Mom after she got out of prison.
I dangled a $100 bill beside his face. The man snapped the $100 out of my hand, got up, and left the theater without a word. I moved to the now vacant seat, and Vigil sat down next to me.
Okay, he said. You got the seat you had to have. Now what?
Now, I said. I masturbate.
I'll see you in the lobby,
Vigil said, standing back up.
Someone tries to kill you. You got my number if you can't bludgeon them to death.
I couldn't help but laugh softly. Hey,
you're the one who insisted on coming along,
I said. He gave another dismissive wave.
Who the fuck you trying to contact?
The elf muttered as he exited the theater.
Pee-wee Herman.
The room settled down after Vigil departed, and I felt the raw, svadhisthana force permeate the room, and I was physically at its center. I opened my senses, viewing it like a swirling orange fog, billowing out of every patron in the room. I opened my sacral lens wide and felt the lust, the wordless need, strum my nerves like a harp. I began my tantric breathing, my focus, as the power flowed through me, an invisible river of silent aching, so sweet and so demanding, all at once. Desire makes crack looks like Skittles. I felt myself become aroused. I stoked that fire inside me, almost oblivious to the shabby, counterfeit lust playing out a dingy fantasy on the movie screen. While the intent of many of the patrons may have been unsavory, wrapped in chains of guilt, violence, and repression, their energy was as pure as sunlight. I was acutely aware of myself, of my body, and the root power churning around me. My hands clutched the arms of my seat, but slowly my fingers loosened and my hands came free to clasp each other, palm in palm, facing skyward, thumbs in opposition, acknowledging the dominance of the water element that work in this place. I began to shape and carve the energy around me, in me, of me, using very precise hand movements, mudras, as my sculpting tools. To a casual observer, I was moving my hands quickly in my lap in a dark porn theater, nothing to see here. I felt the sweet pressure build in my loins, and I denied myself the release, raising the desire to even greater levels, build and deny again and again like climbing a mountain built of ache. In a timeless place, My body and mind were aware only of the subtext of my reality, not the trappings. Because of the nature of what I am, my building energy began to flicker at the edges of the other patrons' auras. I felt several of the men in the room ejaculate, pushing past the threshold of self-control, or casting that control away willingly. To my perceptions, each release was an explosion, a bloom of salamander fire. I almost came too soon from the flood of sexual energy, but my training won out, and I rode the swell of power, greedily hoarding my own sexual energy, using it and theirs to send my call out through the jagged walkways to the other places, the other spheres, lands where energy and intent replace words in coin. This Svadhisthana power, harvested this way, it was her language, and I used it to barter with her. I felt her near, always near to her city, to her unknowing worshippers and sacrifices, to her sacred places. She was outside waiting for me. The movie, the man fucking on the screen, the patrons, many of their faces still locked in a grimace of ecstasy, all slowed to exist in the silence between two heartbeats. The shuddering stream of light from the projection booth was now a solid beam. An orange fog rolled all around me, and the shadows seemed to congeal. I stood, adjusted my jeans to accommodate my tumescence, and headed up the aisle. Best not to keep a goddess waiting. Vigil was in the lobby, sitting in an old chair with duct tape covering rips in the faux leather upholstery. The chair was next to a sun-faded plastic fern in a pot. He had his cell phone to his ear, engaged in a conversation. The orange fog swirled everywhere, making him move very slowly as it cheated time. His fey physiology was resisting the spell I had just cast, but the power behind the spell was powerful enough to slow even him down until I got my answers. I walked past Vigil, the recognition and surprise just beginning to spread across his face in slow motion, and waved as I pushed open the lobby doors and stepped out onto the street. The street lights in the now muted glare of the marquee were all pale hues of tangerine. Everything seemed grainy, slightly scratched and jumpy like an old celluloid film from the 70s. I walked down the rows of hand and footprints of the old porn stars, carefully avoiding some, as I had been told to do, and stepping on others in the correct sequence. It reminded me of playing hopscotch and step on a crack, break your mother's back. My trip down the sidewalk ended at a young woman who hadn't been there a moment ago. She had blonde hair falling to the base of her neck and shoulders, styled in a fashion that reminded me a bit of Farrah Fawcett from the zenith of the 70s. Her eyes were large and brown and gave her the semblance of wide-eyed innocence. If you looked closer, weren't distracted by her youthful body, by those legs, you'd catch the haunted, frightened look that surfaced, fighting against practiced, drugged apathy, and you'd see the real her. She was dressed in a costume, a caricature of a Dallas cheerleader with white mini shorts, white cowboy boots and a blue shirt, open to reveal her cleavage and tied and knotted up to expose her midriff. She held a white cowboy hat in her hands, clutching it tightly. Looking at me, she smiled. It was sweet and very sad, like she was glad to see me, but she bore awful news. Her true name had never been known, but the name she took during her brief time in the porn industry, when she had been alive and mortal, was Bambi Woods.
"Hi,"
she said. Her voice was childlike, lilting, almost musical, with a raised, halting inflection, like she was reading every word she said off a cue card she had never seen before, like maybe she was a little high. There was a very faint northern New York accent in her voice.
"Hey,"
I said, "I'm sorry to trouble you. Thanks for responding."
"Sure,"
she said.
"Wow. I'm surprised anyone still knows how to get in touch with me like this. People, you know, forget."
Bambi had disappeared after becoming an overnight porn superstar. There were more rumors, urban myths, and speculation about her fate than actual porn films she had starred in. Legend had it that Bambi had been ritually murdered in a drug and sex-fueled ritual in L.A. back in the early 80s. Another myth was that she was now a plump and happy housewife and grandma in the heartland of America and just wanted to forget her porn star years. Even I didn't know the full story behind what had actually happened to the real flesh-and-blood woman behind the sex symbol. I knew a few of the touchstones to the myth, however. She had been drug-addicted, sad and frightened. She got caught up in the belly of the beast to pay off a drug debt. Was any of it true? Was all of it? In this town, what was real and what was fake shifted like sand in the wind. I had learned that the image, The idea of Bambi Woods had become a separate entity, the Madonna, the Holy Mother of the skin trade, an archetype that had little base in fact, fed and fueled by lust, greed, and fantasy. Bambi had become the Marilyn Monroe of the sex industry, of this dark corner of Hollywood. Bambi died for their sins and for ours. Ideas fed power often take off on their own, become boilerplate in this shared hallucination we call reality. Bambi was hardwired into the universe of porn now, into the growling, humming nexus of the meat grinder that took in people and spit out husks. She was the porn oracle, and she saw it all the time. "I'm looking for someone," I said. She nodded.
"Yeah,"
she said.
"You've been looking for her for a really long time?"
"Actually, not that long. Her working name is Crystal Myth. What can you tell me about her, where she is, if she's alive?"
"Yeah,"
Bambi said, taking a step closer to me.
"She's alive, but she won't be for much longer. That's sad. And Crystal Myth, that's only one of her names. You've been looking for her for a real long time, Latham, as far back as when you used to jerk off to those videos and think of Rosaline just before you came."
"Wait, what are you saying? Rosaline? How?"
"I could see you on my side of the screen,"
she said and giggled a little. It was practiced and fake.
"I'm on the other side of all the screens watching. You know, Rosaline, that necromancer you were so hot for? You've been looking for Crystal, for all of them, since back when you still used to cry. She's got lots of names, lots of faces. Always a pretty face, never torn up. You've searched for every one of them."
"What are you trying to say?" I asked. "Are you telling me the asshole who's been killing women since the 80s, been destroying their souls, is hunting Crystal now?"
"Yeah,"
Bambi said, nodding, a shadow of a smile at the edges of her face, her eyes full of wisdom, fraught with pain.
"They are. But they didn't start in the 80s. They've been at it for a real long time, honey."
"They?" I said. "Who? Please, Bambi, tell me who's been doing this to these girls. Why are they after Crystal now?"
"A lot of it's outside, you know, my field of vision," she said. "They have lots of names. They're real old. Dog something. They wear, like, hats. I don't know, sorry. But they've been here in the city for as long as the movies have been made, and they've been killing, destroying all that time. 10 to the 119th power, plucking petals off a flower. So many petals you can never see an end. But each one diminishes the flower. They do all this 'cause they, like, you know, get off on it, the annihilation."
Bambi cocked her head and looked directly at me, into me.
"They're kinda like you."
"No," I said, "they're not."
"You guys have a bunch of stuff in common, you know? That's sad, too. I thought you were a nice guy."
"I am nothing like the sick bastards who did this."
"She's the last,"
Bambi said.
"Crystal, she's going to be the last petal that gets plucked."
"Where is she, Bambi? I need to know. I've got to get to her. I've got to stop them." The porn oracle looked at me so wistfully, like she knew the saddest secret in the whole wide world.
"Try to remember, okay, Latham? I know it gets hard with all the little cuts that you get moving through life, but please try to remember how you were a long time ago. Bye. The movie's over. I see you around."
The streetlights all went dark for a breath, and when they came back up, they were their normal color again. Time had caught up to me, and Bambi was gone. Vigil burst through the lobby doors. I think he expected me to be long gone.
How the hell did you get past me?
I shrugged.
We good?
He asked, his hand moving away from his gun under his jacket.
Jury's out, I said, but I'm done here. Come on, let's go.
15. We took Dragon's Jeep the following night to go find Alextra Dare, Karen's old porn star roommate. After a few hours of dead ends and cold leads, Vigil, Dragon, and I finally found the porn diva and her producer boyfriend in downtown L.A. at the Vault, a nightclub and lounge located in what used to be a bank. Grinner had wanted to ride along too, but I'd said no. I need you, I said, to watch a lot of porn for me, anything and everything with crystal meth in it. I want to know who she's worked with in the industry, what companies, what producers, directors, talent. I want as much intel as you can gather on all of them, too.
Affirmative,
Grinner said. I handed him a cardboard document box.
What's all this?
LAPD homicide files, I said, plus everything the Nightwise had on the same cases. 9 women over the last 34 years, all Jane Doe's, all cold cases.
What the hell does this have to do with your missing fairy princess?
Grinner asked. Can you use these photos of the victims and see if you can locate them online, make some IDs?
Yeah,
Grinner said, taking the box. He opened the cardboard lid and leafed through the folders inside.
I can mash up some military and intelligence facial recognition software with an AI program they've been developing to scan photos online, see if we can get some hits. You didn't answer my question. What's this got to do with what you're working?
Nothing, I hope. The music, a cover of Sweet Dreams by Jags Riders and Skylar Stecker, boomed as we moved through the line at the bar and skirted the edges of the dance floor. People knew, on an instinctual level of self-preservation, to give Dragon space and clear a path for her, despite her seemingly innocuous demeanor. She was dressed in a gold and black leopard print blouse, a black leather coat that fell just above her knees, black leggings, and Dr. Martens. Her long hair was up, held aloft by 2 solid jade hairpins, both carved to look like Chinese dragons. I had given them to her a long time ago. Vigil was in a charcoal gray Desmond Marion suit looking like he just fell off a GQ cover, and yours truly was slumming in a black and silver paisley button-up black leather pants and boots. I tripped over a razor and finally managed to shave, too. I let my hair fall to my shoulders. Who says a country boy can't dress up all dapper in the big city?
You look amazing, I said in Dragon's ear as we searched the crowd.
I do, she said. You look like you paid someone in the kitchen a 50 to let you sneak in.
Charmer, I said. She laughed. It was a magical sound. Alextra was in the actual vault from the old bank, redesigned as a cozy little VIP section with bottle service. It wasn't all that hard to suss out that the majority of the folks in the vault section were in porn. A bouncer gave us a hard look as we walked up to Alextra's table. Dragon made him get preoccupied with something else with a glance of her own. Alextra Dare was a giggling, jiggling temple to surgery and drugs. Her face had been narrowed, her chin tightened, her lips puffed up with collagen injections looked like deployed airbags. The skin around her glassy, unfocused green eyes was drum tight and dead from Botox. Her age was difficult to determine due to the butchery, but I put her in her late 20s. Her boob job made it impossible for her to have any idea what her feet looked like, but in the event of a water landing, they would act as a flotation device. She was in a too tight pink and silver sequin mini dress that left little to the imagination and matching shoes with skyscraper-like stiletto heels. Her hair was auburn, straight and falling to mid-shoulder and breast. I saw at least one tat on her upper bicep. A variation on barbed wire with roses and thorns. The ink looked a little faded. She looked up at me and seemed to be trying to focus.
I'm so sorry,
Alextra slurred.
No autographs right now.
The guy Alextra was curled around in the booth, who was pawing her, was squinting at me with dark eyes glazed with simmering anger and numerous chemical libations. His body language told me he had no patience and thought himself the baddest cat in the jungle. Let me guess, I said, snapping my fingers and pointing at the man. George Wilde, right?
Auditions are Wednesday and Thursday at the fucking office, he growled. Now fuck off.
George was in his late 60s with his gray hair close cropped to his thick face. He wore an expensive silk shirt halfway open with a gold chain adorned with golden razor blade visible among the ash-colored chest hair. The Italian loafers he wore with no socks could pay the rent for a family in Encino for 6 months. Despite his expensive clothing, there was a cheapness to his demeanor. George had invested everything he was into this facade, and the paint was peeling. He had been hard once, maybe a middleweight boxer. Given his career choice, he was surely a little mobbed up, but you could see that soft had crept in at the edges, like floodwater seeping under a door. To the average tonic water swilling haircut in this club, he was dangerous. To me, he was an old lion who hadn't realized yet how many teeth he had lost. I need to speak with Alexstra, George, I said. It's about her old roommate, Crystal.
Crystal, Alexstra exclaimed as the name penetrated her drowning awareness. How is she?
George squeezed Alexstra's arm tightly, and the porn actress squeaked in pain and shut up.
You don't get shit but dead unless the three of you get the fuck out of here right now, George said, putting the best dangerous mobster look he could on his spray-tanned face.
We got no beef, George, I said, but we need to talk to the lady. You hurt her like that in front of me again, and we will have a problem. This won't take long. We'll be on our way before your little blue pill kicks in, promise.
Always did have a way with interviews,
Dragon muttered. Wild had been on a low boil before we even came into his world. Now he was hot. He started to rise, his hands slipping into his baggy pants pocket. Vigil took two steps and clasped George's wrist while still in the pocket. Vigil's other hand rested under his jacket.
You pull that .38 out, George, and I'll have to shoot you in the gut, so don't. Ease off the grip and take your hand out nice and slow.
George's anger gutted a little, but not much. He removed his empty hand from his pocket and sat down, glaring. Vigil released his wrist and stepped back.
He's good,
Dragon said to me. I sat down opposite the porn producer, Dragon and Vigil at my back.
I don't know who you fucks think you are, George began, but you're digging your own fucking graves here. You're not LAPD. I fucking know every one of the swinging dicks on the pussy patrol, so you're not Vice. Did Gregor send you? You tell that Vladimir Putin-looking son of a bitch you'll get his goddamn cut. I got production overhead. I got fucking Vegas up my ass for their cut, too.
We're not Vice or with the Russians, I said. All we want is to know what Alexstra can tell us about Crystal Myth. That's it, then we're gone. George sat and looked over to his girlfriend. Alexstra was so out of it, I wasn't sure she had comprehended the conversation going on around her. I placed a finger on her tumbler of scotch, smeared with her lipstick, and uttered a single word. Sobriety, I said. The glass was now empty, and Alexstra blinked several times and then winced as if she had been struck.
Ow, fuck, she said. My fucking head. I think I'm going to puke. It's so fucking loud in here, Georgie.
What is this shit? Wild said, backing up a little. You one of those gonzo freaks, those Satanists, what do they call that shit, grotto or something? You part of Blues Crew? Bunch of weird-ass fucks.
Dragon leaned down to my ear.
Why the hell haven't you ever used that to sober up?
Why the fuck would I? I said, and then leaned forward to Alexstra.
Okay, Alexstra, we're looking for Crystal. We think she might be in a lot of trouble. Can you tell me anything about where she might have gone to? Who she could be with?
Dare's eyes were clear now, focused. She reached for a glass of water and nodded as she drank.
Yeah, Crystal, Chrissy. Yeah, we were roommates back when I first came to L.A., she said. She introduced me to Georgie.
Spooky fucking little bitch, George said, nodding. I worked with her for a while, but she thought she was fucking Meryl Streep. Shit, like I couldn't buy 20 pieces of ass just as good, better even.
Georgie, Dragon said, interrupting the pornographer. Shut up.
Wild began to say something to Dragon, but she let a tiny sliver of her mask slip, and George paled, even through his orange tan.
Go, Alexstra, she said.
Yeah, well, she was kind of different, sad a lot of times, like she didn't belong here or anywhere. She was a good friend. One time this guy, he hurt me real bad, and Crystal, she did some kind of witch stuff, and she made me feel all better. Not just made the hurting stop, she made me feel, I don't know, special, safe, like when you're a little kid sleeping in the back seat of the car, you know, and you just know everything is going to be okay. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I said. That loony coos was into all kinds of witchcraft and shit, thought she was too fucking good to spread her legs and...
George,
Dragon said,
you're doing that thing again that makes me want to nail your head to the table. Close your gassy trap. Go on, Alextra.
Well, she was into some weird shit. She told me she was, like, not human, like a fairy or something. Oh, and Crystal wasn't her real name.
We had our suspicions about that,
Dragon said, looking at me and raising an eyebrow.
Go on.
Yeah, well, she kind of gravitated into the gonzo porn, you know, all the weird kink stuff. It pays better, but I always kind of got the idea it wasn't about the money for her.
What was it about? I asked.
I think she kind of wanted to die,
Alextra said, her eyes falling to the table.
I don't think she had any family, nobody, you know, real. If you ain't got some kind of anchor or something real away from all this, it will eat you up.
Oh, look who's suddenly a PH-fucking-D, Wilde said. What the fuck would you know about anything? Tits for brains, you don't get paid to think.
Vigil, I said, would you please take Georgie outside and try to come up with a good reason not to shoot him?
At last, a real challenge, Burris said as he pulled Wilde to his feet, his other hand once again on his gun under his jacket, and walked him out from behind the table. Dragon stepped over and grabbed a clump of George's chest hair. The old man gasped.
No, please, allow me,
Dragon said.
I'll keep him company out front.
George looked like he was face to face with a cobra, and truth be told, he'd have been better off if he was.
Hey, look, I don't want no trouble, okay? George said. Vigil smiled and nodded to Dragon, gesturing toward the entrance to the bank vault. The knight and nightwise escorted George away, and it was just Alextra and me.
I miss him already, I said. He really brightens the room.
They won't hurt him, will they?
Alextra asked.
He can be a jerk, but he's really sweet sometimes, and he takes good care of me. He spent a ton on surgery to make me prettier.
Did you think you needed it? I asked. She shrugged.
It's a tough business, she said. Always someone with firmer tits or a nicer ass. Someone younger. Georgie, he's just trying to help me keep up, you know?
I think I do, I said. I realized in that moment I could spend the rest of my days trying to save Alextra Dare and a legion of others just like her. I washed my hands of it and hoped that the old bastard said something to Dragon that got him eaten.
You were saying about Crystal?
Yeah, she was like a fairy, like Tinkerbell or something. She tried to explain it to me a few times when she was really drunk and high.
Didn't that freak you out? It was obvious that Alextra and George were not part of the life, and her aplomb surprised me.
Honey, I've had Guatemalan little people shit on me while I was dressed up like Lady Gaga, getting fucked by the Easter Bunny. You think I'm going to lose it over someone telling me they're a fairy? Anyway, she said she couldn't go home no more. She didn't have a home no more. She had that girl next door thing going on, and that got her lots of good gigs in the business. Nobody wants to watch a whore screw, but they will line up with their dicks in one hand and their cash in the other to see little Mary Sunshine fuck. So she had plenty of jobs, but she started going down the slide, you know?
How so?
You ride this train too long, sweetie, and it runs you over one way or another, unless you got something real in your life, like I said. Some people in the business spend all their cash like they're real fucking movie stars. Others it's booze or blow or some other drug. Then there's people like Crystal who go further and further out into the gonzo shit, the kink, the real meatball bullshit. You work without a net in this business, and sooner or later you just disappear. I think that's what might have happened to her. She was working more and more of that grotto stuff. You know grotto?
Yeah, I said, I do. She working for anyone in particular? Roland Blue?
Alextra nodded.
Yeah, he pretty much owns the grotto scene in L.A., she said. Georgie figured you and your crew for some of Blue's guys. You got that whole Army of Darkness vibe going in that weird way you sobered me up.
We don't work for Blue, I said. I'm working a private investigation.
Oh!